Hello, my name is Chrissy Champagne. You are listening to Residue, a true crime podcast dedicated to keeping you paranoid. Today, I wanted to tell you a tragic, one-sided love story about a woman named Grace Brown. Grace had the misfortune of meeting the original 1906 fuckboy, Chester Gillette. Get ready for another upstate New York case that still haunts the people of the Adirondacks to this day. Everyone loves to talk about their home state, where they're from. Just the beauty, the people, the schools, the nightlife, the lakes. Rarely taking a second to remember that the roads we drive on every day, the houses we live in, the lakes we swim in, they all have a history. Many people roamed these roads before us, and the things they experienced, the history they left behind, it's not always lovely, and it's not always spoken about. You'd be surprised just how many crimes have happened right in your own backyards. I'll be taking you way back in time to the Adirondacks in upstate New York to the year 1906, one of the first known true crime cases to hit upstate New York. This train wreck of a romance story was the inspiration for Theodore Dreiser's novel, An American Tragedy. That book inspired a 1931 movie of the same name. And then in 1950, Montgomery Clift and Elizabeth Taylor starred in the romance thriller A Place in the Sun, which went on to win the Academy Award for Best Directing and also the Golden Globe for Best Picture in 1952. Grace Brown was born March 20th, 1886. Grace grew up in the village of South Otselic, Chenango County, New York. She was a dairy farmer's daughter. Grace was beautiful. The picture of her, when you Google her name, she is stunning. And you have to remember, it's 1906, so you didn't really get your picture taken too often. And to have a picture that turned out that beautiful, the girl was banging. Growing up on the farm, Grace's favorite song was "Won't You Come Home, Bill Bailey." And because of this, her friends and family referred to her as Billy. This song was about a man who loved to go out and drink excessively, pursue other women, and eventually his wife kicked him out. It went on to be recorded in future years by Ella Fitzgerald, Bobby Darin, Patsy Cline. I love the Ella Fitzgerald version, and if you could just give this song a listen, I think you'll feel a little closer to Grace and get more of an idea of what kind of girl she was. At the age of 18 in 1904, Grace moves in with her sister Ada, who is married, and she begins working at the Gillette Skirt Factory. It is at this factory that Grace meets Chester Gillette. So Chester's uncle owns the factory. His parents were financially comfortable, but they were deeply religious and eventually renounced material wealth to join the Salvation Army. His family traveled around the west coast of the United States and to Hawaii during his adolescence. Chester never took to the religious aspects of his upbringing. He attended Oberlin College's prep school on the generosity of his wealthy uncle, who owns the factory. He did leave his schooling after 2 years in 1903. And after leaving school, he worked odd jobs until about 1905, and this is when he took the position at his uncle's skirt factory in Cortland, New York. Now, because of Chester's uncle's status in society, Chester was able to wine and dine with the richest and most popular people in town. And he loved parties, and he loved girls. A regular old 1906 fuckboy on our hands here. And while he begins a sexual relationship with Grace, he's also having many relations with many other girls in town. Chester is quite the playboy for someone who has absolutely no money and is just banking off the wealth of his uncle. It is now springtime and love is in the air for Grace, and Grace alone. Grace has learned that she is pregnant, and Chester is not happy about this. And as people at the factory would say, as the spring and summer of 1906 progressed, everyone noticed an increase in the fighting between Chester and Grace. Grace moves back home into her parents' house, and she is now begging Chester to come with her. She wants Chester to marry her. She's sending him letters every day, begging him to leave Cortland and come be with her at her parents'. Chester keeps stalling, giving vague answers, and he hints at the two of them going on a trip sometime soon. Meanwhile, he's out partying and carrying on the same party lifestyle. Craig Brandon, the author of The Murder That Will Never Die, writes that Chester did not want to meet Grace, but, quote, postponing it any further risked the possibility that Grace would come to Cortland and expose him as a seducer to his friends and family. A social disaster. Finally, Chester makes arrangements for a trip to the Adirondack Mountains in upstate New York. Because Grace packed her entire wardrobe for the trip and Chester only packed a small suitcase, some 21st century writers did suggest that Chester had promised to take Brown to a maternity home in upstate New York where she could live until she delivered the baby. In their travels, Chester used a false identity. His suitcase was monogrammed with the letters CEG, so he chose the name Carl Graham, and he used this name at the hotels to register for each night, including a hotel in Utica, New York, where they apparently left the next day without paying. After leaving Utica, they continue on to Tupper Lake in Franklin County, and they spent the night. The rain the next morning ruined their plans for an outing on the nearby lake, and so they returned south to Big Moose Lake in Herkimer County. Big Moose Lake is a large lake about 5 miles north of Fourth Lake in the Adirondacks in upstate New York. The lake's popularity derives from its remoteness, climate, and beauty. On July 11, the two initially considered taking a steamboat tour, but instead rented a rowboat. The wooden boat Chester rented that day was a 17-foot Adirondack skiff. Before boating, Chester left Grace at the dock and returned to the hotel to retrieve some of their things. He came back carrying his suitcase and a tennis racket. He did not bring Grace a straw hat, even though it was a sunny day and ladies of the early 1900s considered freckles unattractive. Good to know. I probably wouldn't have been very popular in 1906. After placing his suitcase in the skiff, Chester and Grace row out onto Big Moose Lake, and they soon were out of sight. Hours later, the pair failed to return. The man who rented them the skiff was named Robert Morrison, so he reported Grace, and aka Carl Graham, missing. The following afternoon, a boat was discovered floating upside down in Punky Bay, one of the lake's most isolated coves. A lady's black jacket was caught on the keel, and a man's straw hat and some magazines floated nearby. It is at this point that a search is conducted throughout the lake to find the two individuals. It is now that Grace's body is found at the bottom of the lake. As Grace's body was pulled from the lake, nearby onlookers say that they could see clotted blood on the small of her nose, and they could see dark blood draining from her nostrils. There was also a gash on her lips that exuded blood. The undertaker who transported Grace's body to Herkimer for autopsy later testified that he observed dark discolorations and abrasions on the girl's face. I'm going to read the autopsy report to you. The body of a female, well-nourished, height 5 feet, 1 inch, weight about 105 or 110 pounds, the lips were swollen and discolored. Tip of the nose presented a like appearance, somewhat flattened. The left cheek or molar bone presented discoloration. The right central incisor or tooth was loose in its socket. Found on the cheek, a black and blue spot with a degree of swelling that had been inflicted before death. Found a point of discoloration on the scalp over the right side, about 3 inches above the ear. On incision, the injury extended beneath the scalp. The blood vessels were ruptured and hemorrhage had occurred at the point of injury. The injury had produced a small blood clot about the size of a nickel on the brain, and the blood vessels in the brain were ruptured. This injury occurred before death and was necessarily such as to produce unconsciousness from shock. After Grace's body was found, the next day Chester was arrested in nearby town of Inlet, New York. When Chester's room was searched, the police found that he had kept Grace's letters. They speculated as to why, and I've thought about it myself, and I think maybe he was going to get rid of them far away from Cortland, far away from home. He was going to burn them. And I wanted to read you one of Grace's letters. I am so blue. Oh dear. If you were only here and would kiss me and tell me not to worry anymore. I will try so hard to please you. Darling, if you will only write and tell me that you will surely come Saturday and not to worry. I am crying, so I can't see the lines. You will never know, dear, how badly I feel or how much I want you this minute. When Chester's trial took place in Herkimer County, copies of Grace's love letters were published in booklet form and sold outside of the courtroom during the trial. This trial garnered nationwide attention. Chester was on his own. His uncle, who had always given him a chance at a better life, refused to pay his legal bills. One paper labeled Chester a callous, cold-hearted brute, and public opinion became so intense, there was talk of storming the jail and lynching the murderous Chester Gillette. The trial lasted 3 weeks. One or more of the gruesome aspects of the trial occurred while the district attorney was questioning one of the examining physicians. The DA just strolled across the courtroom carrying a jar containing a uterus and a dead fetus and casually asked the physician to identify them. The doctor did so, explaining that during the autopsy, Miss Brown's womb and unborn child were removed from her body. There were no witnesses to what happened that day on Big Moose Lake. Evidence showed that there were strands of long brown hair discovered on one of the oars for the boat. It is believed that Chester, knowing that Grace could not swim, rented this boat, rowed to a secluded spot, and either hit her with the tennis racket or the oars, pushing her over the boat into the water where he knew she would drown. Other theories that floated around were considering that Grace might have committed suicide by diving into the water during an argument with Chester when he refused to marry her. But of all the possible scenarios, the least plausible was offered by Chester himself. Chester took the witness stand, and the narcissist that he was, believing that the jury were just a bunch of idiots, he claimed that Grace became so distraught that she took her life after he suggested that the two of them go together and explain to her parents that she was pregnant. The jury were not fans of Chester at all, and he had a hard time explaining a lot of things to them. One being, why did you bring your suitcase on the boat, and how did it end up dry even though the boat was overturned? So Chester Gillette was convicted of the premeditated murder of Grace Brown. A New York State appeals court held the verdict, and Governor Charles Evan Hughes refused to grant clemency or give a reprieve. On March 30th, 1908, Chester Gillette was executed by electric chair at Auburn Prison in Auburn, New York. Chester Gillette was buried in Soul Cemetery in Senate, New York. There are claims of a ghostly figure of Chester that haunts the old Gillette factory, wearing a white shirt and carrying a tennis racket. Ex-cellmates of Chester, and also men that were imprisoned in the jail years later, they tell stories of awaking to see Chester's ghost standing by their jail cell cot. Hauntings were reported in that jailhouse until 1977, when the building was left abandoned. Hauntings were also reported around the courthouse where they held the trial. So during the trial, the boat was brought into the courtroom as evidence. But 3 years after the trial ended, this boat mysteriously disappeared from the evidence room. So the Herkimer Telegram had to actually run the following article. The stories have it that the grim tragedy is frequently reenacted in the vicinity of the courthouse, that a boat with ghostly figures of a man and a woman are seen as though rowing on water, the features of the man being those of Gillette, that at times a struggle ensues between man and woman, when following a piercingly unearthly scream, the latter is hurled from the boat and disappears. Those braver hearted, it is said, have rushed upon the spectral figures in an effort to solve the mystery, only as they reach the figures to have the scene vanish. They grasp for thin air. Grace's funeral was held in her hometown of South Otselic, New York. She is buried in the Brown family plot. Since her death in 1906, Grace's ghost has been reportedly haunting Big Moose Lake. The sadly haunting figure is often seen drowning, wandering around the lakeshore, or turning lights on and off in cabins. A plaque stands in Grace's honor in the town of Otselic, New York. It reads, "Grace Brown, whose life and death inspired Theodore Dreiser's An American Tragedy, her final resting place in the valley she loved." Dedicated 2006, Town of Otselic. So the next time you're enjoying life, relaxing on the lake with your loved ones, before you get ready to jump into that murky water, say a prayer for Grace and all of the other murdered spirits of the unknown who just might be lurking at the bottom of the lake. If you enjoy Residue, please leave a 5-star review on any of your preferred listening platforms. It really helps us to reach other people who might enjoy the show. I appreciate everyone's support. I'm so thankful for all of my listeners. It means the world to me. And I hope that I've given you one thing this episode, and that is to teach you to stay paranoid.